This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. Project, welcome back to this episode of The After Show. If it's your first time listening, which I don't know if there's many people first time listening today, but maybe your first time listening.
There's always one.
There's always one.
Someone's doubled.
So if it is your first time listening, welcome to the show. We do four episodes a week. First episode of every week, we interview someone who is basically a leader in their space in health and fitness. Second episode of the week, after show, what we're doing today, we're talking about current events, talking about what's going on in our lives, giving you an update of everything that's going on in health and fitness, answering your questions about training, health, nutrition, life, business. And then on Thursday, we choose a single topic, whether it's strength, body or fitness related, sometimes nutrition related. We go deep on that question. Then on Friday, it's the business show in the black. We talk specifically about fitness business. But today, the after show, where do you want to kick this off? My Melbourne trip?
Well, what I'll add to this is that a lot of people know we're doing 75 hard. Mm. Now the whole studio is doing 75 hard. Even Connor.
All three of us.
Producer of the show is also on 75 hard. So a lot of outdoor workouts are happening.
Yeah. And I've got three other boys starting 75 hard end of this month. And I actually, a few people messaged us in on the podcast saying they had also completed 75 hard.
We should get like a discount code. So shame it's free. Use MMP and you can start 75 hard.
We don't need me. No one needs to commercialize this. You just need to do it. You just need to upgrade your life. I know one girl, she messaged in, one woman messaged in. I can't remember your name exactly, so I apologize. But
make one up.
She did it and she lost ton of weight. She was awesome, like fully changed her life. Best decision she's ever made. So it is definitely an infectious program. I would say that it's extremely good. Look, here's the thing though.
I do think that's not the reason. I know it's good if you do, but I reckon that's not the reason to start it. For weight loss?
No, absolutely not.
I know people will lose weight. If for me, I'm probably not going to lose weight. But if you came into this heavy, you would.
Yeah.
Or you just change your diet dramatically and you try and lose weight. But this is not the one I would give to a weight loss client.
No. If you want, why you use 75 hard is because you want a shift in your life. So the reason we did it is because we wanted to shift up a year because we were opening locker room and we wanted to upgrade our discipline, our productivity. Our scheduling, because it forces you address so many areas of your life there, and we felt like we needed to upgrade as owners going into locker room. That's why we did.
Also, I think it's looking ahead. I was like, oh, this is definitely the stuff that I'm going to drop off on.
What do you mean?
Well, if I'm like, oh, I'm getting really busy with work, it's like this list of things that we're doing. Outdoor workout, indoor workout, my diet, reading. I'm like, oh, they're probably the first things that I'm going to struggle to do if I get busy.
Yeah, and they're like, it's compacting your best day ever. Mm. So you're the best version of yourself. You're packing it into one day and then it's like, all right, cool. What if I stretch that out over 75 days? How far ahead would I get? How many books would I read? How productive would I become? How many workouts would I do? How better would my diet be? Like no alcohol, no cheat meals, all this sort of stuff. And so it has like a really profound effect on your life. But I think why most people do 75 hard, obviously...
Just post about it on Instagram.
Well, there's always that. But why most people do it is not because... So we did... I mean... You know, I wasn't happy. I mean, it's not unhappy. We're very grateful where we are in our life, but still big goals to chase, still a lot to get done. We're doing it to level up. I think a lot of people are probably in a really bad place and they're like, I need something to get me out of this hole. Whereas that wasn't us. We're like, you know, things are going really good, but...
It'd be good for that. I think it'd be really good.
I think that's why most people do it. They're like, fuck, you know, it's got out of a shit relationship or I hate my job and I'm unproductive at work. Maybe I'm not getting the results I want in the gym. Like, a few different factors are going on and it's just like, man, I'm just stuck. You know what I mean? A lot of people kind of get like that, especially with everything that's going on with the viruses and the lockdowns. People need something to really kind of get them out of that shit place, and I think that's really what it's useful for, because it is so hard and so challenging. It's not like, oh cool, we're going to change like one thing this week, we're going to eat more protein. It's like, no, you're taking on a lot of stuff. The odds are against you to start it. And look, the dark and dirty secret about 75 hard is that if you do fail and you start again and you fail again and you choose to quit, so just say you fail and you choose to quit and not continue, is you're almost worse off than when you started, I feel, in some ways. So it's just like, I would be a little bit cautious before you actually go into it. You do have to be very committed. You have to have a really strong why behind why you're doing it. Anyway, talking about 75 hard, I think I've done 37 days. I'm on day 37. Definitely the most challenging time was my Melbourne trip on the weekend. So Melbourne, the amazing city that I absolutely love so much, finally has come back to normal. I took a weekend trip there. Part of it was to see the beautiful city again. It has so much of what Sydney doesn't have. And that's why I like going there, because it just gives you, I guess, the stuff in your life or in your routine that you don't get anywhere else in Sydney. So, you know, you get the amazing city, it's thriving, you get the shopping, you get the food, you get the nightlife. I went there for the comedy festival. It's really good. Went with a bunch of friends as well, so that was a great trip as well. But I knew that it was funny because we did the Easter weekend, which was a four-day weekend, and I felt like we didn't take a break. Yet, even though 75 hard was harder in Melbourne, like logistically, I did actually feel like I was on a holiday. And so I did have a bit of a downtime, bit of a break, but I did miss the ability. One thing that 75 hard definitely robs you of is the ability to sleep in. You just can't really sleep in unless you've got a completely empty day, but I don't seem to have any of those anymore in my life. But, and you especially with a kid, but you do. So like I'm on holidays, but I'm not really getting any more sleep. But the hard thing about an outdoor workout in Melbourne is it's always rainy, it's always cold. So I'd start my outdoor workout and I'd start getting rained on and I'd be freezing to death. But it's part of the challenge, right? And then you're also trying to fit it in around all the activities you're trying to do in a day. So, you know, at one point I think there's always like a little bit of downtime between events. Like maybe you went out for lunch, you did a bit of shopping, then it's like, cool, we're going to like the AFL later. There's like a 2-hour gap. Usually 2-hour gap's like, cool, I'm just going to go and like have a nap, chill out, whatever. I'm like, cool, that's my workout time. So Ev, she's in the apartment. She's like, all right, cool. So let's just have a nap. And I was like, I ain't fucking having a nap. I'm not going to get this done. I'm going to be walking the streets of Melbourne at 10 p.m., 11 p.m. if I don't get this nap in. If I get this nap in. And she's like, oh, fuck. So I'm dragging her out of bed. We're going to the gym. And it made me think about a post, which was, what are the most effective out of routine training tips I could think of? And stuff that like actually works, you know, stuff that's actually pragmatic. So I wrote them down. I put them on my Instagram in case you want to find them again. So three out of routine training tips, which I really like. And I do use these a lot with our clients. So number one is you need to have your workout written down and ready. So you need to either have a coach that's programmed something for you or you know, something that you've written down yourself ahead of time. And make it stuff that you're really good at. Make it the most enjoyable thing ever. I think the last thing you want to do is spend the first half of your day, if you're doing a lunchtime workout, for example, dreading the fact that you've got this like insane open workout to do.
That's,
you know,
exactly what
an,
I always
an
do.
An open retest. What you can look forward to is like, oh, cool, all I've programmed for myself today is 45 minutes of delts. I'm way more likely to go do that because I know it's easy. Like, I don't have to worry about it. And I'm trying to win the CrossFit Games on my out-of-routine training workout. I'm just trying to get something in to keep the routine. That's the goal. The goal is to keep the routine. So make it easy. The second thing I said is overload on caffeine. The reason I wouldn't do that in my normal routine is because if I've got so many other priorities in the day, if I drink too much caffeine in one area, I will absolutely crash in the more important things. But when you're out of routine, you're on holidays, so what if you get tired at 3 p.m.?
You don't. You're having fun. You don't crash.
Yeah, it's like, it's whatever. So I do that because your motivation is generally lower to train when you're out of routine. If you drink a lot of caffeine, you've got heaps of excess energy, you're like, fuck, I got to use this energy for something, and it actually kind of motivates you to train.
It's like when I was younger, I got this like new pre-workout, probably like 15, and I drank all this pre-workout, and then my parents were like, oh, you can't go to the gym. But I was like, no, you don't understand, I've drunk so much pre-workout. They're like, no, you can't go, like, we're going after dinner, like, you're not going to the gym. And I'm like, no, like, I'm sweating, I'm shaking. There's nothing worse than when you load it up on pre and
so what
you can't
did you drop did like 1,000 burpees,
push up, squats, yeah, yeah, so I was gonna throw up.
Yeah. And then last thing I wrote is to keep it under an hour. And the reason I did that is because if the whole thing under an hour, so traveling to the gym, doing the workout, getting back, if you keep that whole thing under an hour, generally what you'll get is pressure from the social circle that you're traveling with, whether it's work colleagues, whether it's partner, whether it's friends or whatever. If you tell them, hey, I'll be back in an hour. It could be a run, it could be a walk, whatever. The barrier to entry or the barrier to resistance is so low that most people are like, it's only an hour. Like, I'll just go do something quick. I'll have a meal, I'll have a nap, I'll read a book, whatever. You'll be back soon. So if you plan to do an hour and a half workout and then you want to go to this special gym and it's 30 minutes away, either there, you've taken a massive chunk out of everyone's day because you're not just on your time when you're on holidays, you're on other people's time as well because they want to do things with you, right? And so I think that if you know you're going to keep it short and keep it under an hour, you find something close by. If the gym's 45 minutes away, don't go to that gym. Find a closer gym. You know what I mean? Or do an outdoor workout. Do something in the room. Just keep the whole event, the whole process under an hour, and you're not going to face the resistance from other people. Because you could be really motivated to do this workout, really excited, loaded up on caffeine, and then exactly like your parents said or someone else, like, what? You're going to go where? Do that? No, yeah. Don't do that. Nah, it's stupid. I can't. Nah, don't. Nah, it's going to take too long. Yeah. This, that. And all of a sudden, you're like, oh, fuck. All right, well, I won't do it. And then everything you plan has gone out the window. So keep, when you're planning initially, keep it compact. Keep it in a 1 hour window.
Well, one last thing I'll add is that a mistake I've made in the past is when you try and force a workout on a place that's not ready for it. So like the worst workouts I've had is where I've been like, oh, I'll try and like snatch in this gym with this like broken bar and no chalk and no shoulder. The best thing to do, I always think, is like make the most of the space you've got.
Mm.
So a few times when we've been traveling, it's like a hotel gym. Like, awesome, I'm going to do the fitness test on this shitty treadmill.
Mm.
You know, like use the stuff you've got. Make it a mad session for what you've actually got there. Don't try and like force what you normally do on some shitty gym. Or if it's like a full bodybuilding gym, go in, do the best bodybuilding session you've ever done. Don't try and like do your conditioning in the corner of a bodybuilding gym.
You'll feel like less weird about
it. We've had some mad sessions like that, right? We've gone to really good gyms and we've just done the right thing for that gym.
When in Rome, bro?
We went to Doherty's in Melbourne.
Yeah.
That would have been a disgrace if we'd got on the rower. There was a rower there. If we'd got on that rower, I reckon they could have kicked us out.
It's a test. Yeah, that rower is a test. Yeah, it's a test. It's like, it's testing the CrossFitters.
Yeah,
it's like, oh, we found a CrossFitter.
Oh, you cardio. Wait,
get the fuck out of here, bro. Take your WADs and your Reebok Nanas. Get the hell out of here. This is an underground dungeon.
I was doing my laces. I fell over. I'm about to do delts.
That's Phil Heath's name on the wall, not Rich Froney, bro. Get the fuck out of here. Anyway, so Melbourne, really good. Man, the Fitness First there. I went to Fitness First on Flinders Street.
I've been there.
Yeah. Good gym. Nice gym. Dead. It was middle of Saturday, so it was always going to be dead anyway. But I was trying to talk to the GM because, like, I know one of the GMs at Bond Street, and I was talking about the swipes and stuff. I'm like, hey, I know this guy and this guy. He's like, oh, yeah, cool. And I was like, oh, swipes wants to be down or whatever. He was so tight-lipped about it. I was like, bro, it's not like I'm Richard Branson, your main competitor. Everyone knows your swipes are down. Like, what secret are you hiding from me? And then he just went real sour on me. He goes, all right, did you bring a towel? No. He's like, all right, I'm going to charge you for a towel. I was like, come on, bro. I asked about the gym being down. I'm trying to just ask if you're going okay. Can, you know, how are things going? That's all I'm asking. So he didn't even smile once. And I just thought, man, people just don't really take customer service seriously in Australia for some reason. They just don't think basics of customer service, eye contact and smiling. How hard is that to do? Guys, when you walk into Fitness First, being a pandemic in Melbourne, people are trying to sign back up. You should be like, hey, welcome back. We're so excited to have you. Like, how are you? How have you been? It's not just like, fucking, here's a towel. Get into the workout. Well, it's
weird. Some people I do find have like, business, talking about business is like a bit of a taboo for them. Like you, I don't know, I've been once before at a hairdresser and I was like, oh, you know, how's it been? Like, we're thinking, oh, you know, good. Never talk business with customers.
Right.
Which I always find really weird. And I notice that the clients we get at Locker Room, more business people, like they love to talk about it.
So yeah.
They're like, oh, it's a weird thing. They're like, oh, yeah, I know. You guys must have had a hard year last year, right? It's fucking pandemic.
Yeah.
Whereas for some reason, other people, I don't know if it's like a money thing, but they think it's like you're never meant to talk about it.
It's just like you want to build relationships and rapport. And that's part of what you do. What is connecting you guys in this relationship is the business. So that's obviously the natural point of discussion. It's not just like, oh, cool. Tell me about like your family. Like, all right, well, maybe we'll get to that in like 10 haircuts. But like right now, oh, how's the business going? How's your work going? So
particularly for fitness, where everyone knows it's been such a horrid time for fitness. You know, we're all in it together.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know, I just thought it was a bit weird. But anyway, got a good workout in. Actually ended up meeting up with Daniel Vadnell from Fitness FAQs, who was on the show a few weeks ago, and met him in person. Thank to say, I am slightly bigger than him, which is a relief. But the density of this guy is ridiculous. Like, obviously, when you've just built your body to do like levers and shit, like you're just so dense. But yeah, super nice guy, heaps of time for Daniel. Like I was saying to him, there's not many of us that fight the good fight. A lot of influencing, I would say 97% to 98% of influencing is just a bunch of shit, right? It's just people that sell bad workout routines, aren't educated, have never worked with clients in person. Basically all they sell is just like fake shitty supplements and promote shit brands just for a paycheck. And most of them are fake. Like most of the content they put out or whatever, like they don't do it, they don't believe in it, they don't stand behind it, they don't know about it, they're just making it up or copying someone else. And it's safe to say he's, you know, part of the very narrow 2% that, you know, very genuine person, like very, very good at what he does, like trying to really help people, not just trying to, you know, make easy money. So it's good to have a guy like him, you know, from the interview, be exactly the same in person.
Yeah, and I watched some of his videos when I thought I was going to do the interview, and it's fucking crazy.
Yeah, crazy.
He's like, did he have a background? Did he grow up with gymnastics?
No, nothing. Yeah. He was just like 18, and he decided, I'm sick of the Globo stuff. I want to do some calisthenics.
Yeah, phenomenal.
And then he's like, next level. Yeah, so he was an awesome guy to meet up with. And Yeah, I was pumped about that. You know what I wasn't pumped about, though, was, bro, we did the comedy festival and the COVID jokes are out of control in Melbourne. Because obviously they went through the harshest lockdown in the world. I spent a good 30 minutes just like beating a dead horse on coronavirus lockdown jokes, you know? And like, I get it, they're a little bit funny, but I'm just over it. I don't want to hear jokes about lockdowns and stuff again. Like, kind of over it, to be honest. And you know what I'm also over? Peeing all the time. The worst part is you're out with friends all the time and you're walking between the blocks and you're like, I gotta go pee. They're like, this guy.
It's a common occurrence.
Peeing all the time. Yeah. Like, yeah, I was drinking 3 liters of water. Of course I'm gonna be peeing nonstop. So that is becoming a little bit annoying, I must admit.
I don't know if it's unhealthy for you to pee that much, but I do feel like my muscles are weakening at a faster rate. When you get really old, like you can't hold in your pee anymore.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm getting there faster.
You got a prostate issue?
Yep.
Yeah. It could just be the fact that you're drinking 75 hard. 4 liters of water a day. But yeah, that was like one thing that I'm a lot better at now. I think it's tracking the water and then also reading the book. It's like a lot more automatic now. Some of these things are becoming a lot more like automatic in the day.
Well, you do notice that I think it turns up your thirst. So when you start drinking more water, I think you're
thirsty.
It makes you more thirsty, because I would go through, you know, drink so much less water before this, and I wouldn't feel that thirsty. And now, if I'm like a little bit behind my water, I'm like, oh, I'm really thirsty. I think it like increases your, I don't know, your expectations.
I can drink a liter like easy, no problem.
Because I notice with other people, they're like, oh, I'm not thirsty, and they like, don't drink at all. They barely drink water.
Yeah.
And like, I'm like, if I had a day in your shoes, I would be so thirsty.
Yeah.
So I do think there's like a natural thing in there. When you start drinking more water, you actually awaken your natural thirst. Mm.
Yes. Yeah, I think so. It's very possible. But it's good to kind of round out the Melbourne point. It's good that Melbourne's back. It's good that they're kind of out of a lockdown. Man, if you didn't know that they were in like the longest tier 4 lockdown in the world, you would have thought everything was normal. Mm. It's just as busy, if not busier than Sydney. I mean, they spend a lot more time, despite the shit weather, out of their homes than people do in Sydney, right? Despite our really good weather, we don't spend... A lot of Sydney spends time indoors, you know, strangely. But yeah, out and about, the city was absolutely pumping. Clubs are full, bars are full, restaurants are full, lines out the door, everything. So really good for that to come back. So yeah, pumped for that economy. And actually, you know, it was interesting because... Let me give you a little quiz. See if you actually know the answer here. Which city has more skyscrapers? So a skyscraper is a building over 150 meters. Sydney or Melbourne? If you were to guess, instinct.
It's got to be Sydney.
It's Melbourne.
Wow.
By like 20 skyscrapers. Wow. Yeah. And
we've got more people though.
Only just. Mm. Only just. Pretty much even at this point. Now. Because we just got really obsessed with skyscrapers on this trip.
Yeah.
So now, what city do you think has the most skyscrapers in the world? Ooh. And how many skyscrapers? Oh, give me the cities you're thinking of right now.
Obviously, New York.
New York's coming to mind. Yep.
Dubai.
Dubai's coming to mind.
Yep. London.
London. Yep.
It's got to be there. I don't think like when I was there like. Paris and Italy are that built up.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I'm not going to go with them. I'm thinking, like, Hong Kong and Singapore. Shanghai.
Okay. Okay.
And I'm going to finally pick one.
Okay.
Shanghai.
No.
Damn it.
Okay. Hong Kong. Hong Kong's number one. Okay. And what is the amount of skyscrapers they have? So, to give you an idea, I think Melbourne has, like, 65. Sydney's got, like, 50-something.
500?
Close. It's got 480 or something. Okay, New York's in third place. I think Shenzhen was second in China, but second and third are like a lot closer. So, New York, how many skyscrapers do you think New York has? We've like, been to New York, you've seen it.
Probably like about 4 or 5 times. I reckon like 200 to 300.
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah. Has 250.
Yeah. The thing is...
Dude, Hong Kong is so much smaller. It's ridiculous.
And that tells you why. It's because somewhere like Hong Kong, I don't know exactly, but it would probably be, you know, the GDP nearly of like Australia.
Yeah, it has to go up. They have such limited space, they have to go up. Mm. You know, they can't spread themselves out. But you know what's the more crazy fact out of all these will blow your mind the most? Is Sydney and Melbourne both have more skyscrapers than London.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Because they're not allowed. It must be like restrictions.
I just think that London City is so big, they have so much mass, but they just haven't built high. So, they've built low. So, obviously, it's a way bigger city, but it just hasn't gone up as high. But, yeah, because obviously we love... I love Hong Kong, and you and I both love New York, even though we've only sort of driven through it. I know you've spent more time in it. when you think about the chaos of New York and the density and size of it, it's there. But then I realized that Hong Kong is on a different level. So if we went from Hong Kong to New York, New York would seem like a bit of a ghost town by comparison. Like, Hong Kong is next level busy.
Well, that's the interesting thing about people, because everyone always talks about, oh, you know, we got too many people. I would always think, oh, it's because you like run out of space for the people. The truth is, you don't run out of space for the people.
No.
There is so much space. Heaps we could space. Have like 1,000x as many people in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
It's really just the resources.
Yes.
Like enough food for them and everything like that.
Yeah, I was having this discussion with our friend Desh, and he was saying like that in Sri Lanka, it's like it's the population of Australia.
In Sri Lanka, yeah.
Yeah,
the same.
Yeah, but it's the size of Melbourne.
Yeah.
And
like the size of Tasmania.
Yeah.
I think smaller.
No, it's way smaller.
Yeah.
Size of Victoria. And he goes, I lived in a rural village with farmland as far as the eye could see. So even then, he's like, dude, it's not even close to using up the landmass. All it is just like how cities are built. Those like densely populated urban areas are really inefficient. Mm. So like what's a more efficient use of space is like really spread out on grids and like grids that use like, you know, rather than so many central power sources, much more spread out power sources, which are like, you know, supplied by natural energy and like renewable energy.
But then also like the way we do our food now, you need so much farmland and stuff like that. There's so much like empty space you need to fuel the city.
Yeah.
You know, just so like just for how we get our food. So
yeah.
Eventually, once they can make the food, whatever, in a factory or something, in a skyscraper, ideally, yeah. So the food can go up.
Yeah.
Have the cows on the fucking upwards farm. Then we could, yeah, populate the earth, probably.
It's just one of those things, like, I was talking about this. One of our clients at Locker Room, he's starting a super fund for natural energy. Oh, wait, crazy fact about super funds. So, for American listeners, 401k, right? So, it's the companies that, basically, you give them a portion of your savings automatically, and they reinvest it and try and make it grow for you. But the biggest super fund in Australia, which is Australian Super, so think about this just generally across all industries, right? If I was to say the biggest super fund, the biggest fitness brand, the biggest fast food chain or whatever, the biggest app in the world, right? What percentage of their market, total market share, do you think the biggest super fund has in the world?
In Australia.
In Australia, sorry.
10%?
Bro. 0.005%. No, 0.05%.
And they're the biggest.
They're the biggest.
How many
1/400th, is that right? 0.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's 0.25%.
Yeah, 0.25.
Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
They're the biggest.
Yeah, it's like thousands and thousands and thousands of tiny small funds. Yeah, it's so weird. Because like basically in any industry, the market leader would definitely have more than 1% of the market in any industry. So it's like quite a unique industry. Like lots of potential. But anyway, the reason I brought that up is because they're investing in renewable energy and like all these ethical companies and stuff like that. And we're having a discussion yesterday, and it's probably a worthwhile discussion for everyone listening to have with other people. And I know it's kind of a little bit off topic, but it's not, because it's part of food security as well. And food security is how you fucking have your organic chicken breast every day with brown rice. But if people think that the protests, the chaining yourself to a tree, going on marches and all that sort of stuff will actually make a difference in how the world moves from fossil fuels to renewable energy. It actually won't. What will actually make a difference is where the money is, right? If people are still profiting billions of dollars each year off oil, that's not going to change, right? Until we run out of oil. So how you actually do it is where the money goes, where you invest. So if you put money into this person's company, right, and they invest it into renewable energy sources, ethical companies, then that will eventually make it more profitable long-term for new industries and current industries to be like, wow, if we invest here, we're actually getting a better return and we're getting more customer acquisition, and we're getting more funding. Let's make part of our investment portfolio ethical, right? So that is how you actually make a difference. And there's more research on that, more data on that we could go into, but where you actually invest your dollar is, or where you park your money to be invested is actually how you get these things to change in the long term, which sounds pretty obvious now, but I thought it was just worth bringing up for people that didn't really realize that. So next time you think about going marching in a protest, go do that, post in a Facebook group, whatever, but just realize it's not actually going to make a difference. What makes a difference is where you park your savings, what companies you invest in the long term. And they're actually a better investment in the long term. And to give you probably the most relevant example you could think of is Elon Musk, right? Before Elon Musk, electric cars were a joke, right? If you, what was it, like the Prius? Was that like the only, like the main?
Well, it's a hybrid, it's not really electric.
Yeah, but that was like the main electric car when people would think of it, right?
It was the best way to go green. Yeah.
Right.
To get a hybrid.
And it's a joke. Like, no one wanted a Prius, right? But what actually changed the game is, like, it became sexy to have a Tesla, right? It was faster than a petrol car. And it was actually cooler. And it was, like, associated with this guy, this billionaire tech genius, Elon. Everyone's like, I want to be a part of that, right? I want to show my core values by investing in a Tesla. And so he made it cool. And then what happened was, Elon goes, oh, actually, look how much money I've made just off electric cars. And then all of a sudden, Mercedes is like, okay, well, we have to have electric cars because there is a market now that's buying the electric cars. So as soon as you create the market demand, you will slowly make the shift. So it's up to us, really, where we invest our money, starting with stuff like Super, where you're going to put it in something anyway, make a better choice, do it in something ethical. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, and I think people would be surprised because a lot of the companies out there will be like, oh, we only do ethical, right, for a good example. And then part of ethical could be like Woolworths.
Right.
So, if you're in America, it's like a supermarket chain, right? That usually falls under like the ethical green investments. But most of their money still comes from factory farming.
Right.
So, it gets wrapped up. You might think it's doing good and it's often not as good as you think.
Yeah. It just requires more diligence and research. Yeah. And I get it. You just don't want it. You just don't care. You've got other things to worry about. Your family, you've got sport on the weekend, your training, all this sort of stuff. And it's the last thing you think about. But when the opportunity presents itself to move to a different super company, you should. You should try and make that little bit of extra effort. And then you have never have to think about it again. That's all done for you.
It's an easy one.
Exactly. So, tell me, you got this new thing on your wrist. It's like the Rolex of Garmin's, but what is this thing?
Well, we've had this... People have asked so many times about the review between the Garmin and our Whoop. And I've had a similar watch, but I've never actually had a Garmin to do this review. So, I got...
But you had... Maybe you have a Garmin. You had a Garmin
before. No, I had a different brand. I had a Suunto.
Oh, okay.
Just like a... basically a similar thing, except it was a lot older, so it was like more of a bushwalking watch, but it did fitness and stuff like that, right?
So not like normal walking, only for bushes.
Yes, because it like does navigation and shit, right?
Okay, bushwalk.
But the difference with the Garmin is like really designed for fitness, right? So this, I don't know, it's called the Fenix 6 Pro. I think they all do pretty similar stuff.
Yeah,
it is
a nice looking watch. It looks more like hardcore than your last watch, your bushwalking watch.
It looks like a pretty normal watch, to be honest.
What inspired you to get this?
Really, my run, my 30K march. Oh, yeah. I wanted to get like more data when I was running, to be honest, because it does like all the pacing and shit like that. So it does a bunch of this type of stuff. I guess with why people ask, like the Whoop does, right? So it does like all your sleep, wraps it all up and stuff like that. What I realized is better than how to talk about this before is just the way it delivers your fitness is like outstanding.
Okay.
Really, really
good. In an app.
It does the app, but really more on the actual watch when you're running. The battery life is really good, much better than I thought it was. It goes
how long?
That's like weeks.
Oh my God, yeah, weeks.
Weeks.
Wow. And then how long is the charge when you have to charge it up?
I think it's like a few hours, gives you weeks.
That's it?
Yeah. Fuck. It's really good. But also, it's got like a full colorful screen. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like a really blank screen.
It's just like the Apple Watch, right? It's got heaps of different colors.
Yeah, it wouldn't have a resolution as good as that.
Yeah.
But pretty close. Like, it's like that.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, if you're running, it'll go dark.
It's not as good as that.
The resolution won't be as good. But if you put, like, say you're running and you put your wrist up to look at it, like, it'll automatically light up, right? It knows when you're looking at your watch.
Yeah.
However the fuck it does that.
Same as Apple Watch, but yeah.
Yeah. No, I guess that's how it saves the battery.
You keep going through the features. I'll let you know as soon as the Apple Watch doesn't have one of those features.
So, what I like about it really is just the data when you're running is excellent. So, like, every single, like, metric you could ever imagine when you're running, it gives...
Cadence.
Right, everything. Pace, cadence, average heart pace, rate, like, how long, everything, right?
Sweet.
Everything you could imagine going all through it. So, that side of it is really good. The map side of things as well when you're running is excellent because you, like, look through, you can see, like, exactly where you've gone and where you... Because often when I'm running, I'm just, like, try and work out a new route and I'll go through all of that. So, it does that. It gives you data on, like, your stress and shit like that. I actually don't even know, really, how it calculates all that. But
like your calorie burn?
Yeah, it does like all your calorie almost. Burn, yeah, everything like that. It does all your sleep. I've compared the sleep to the Whoop. It comes in pretty similar. So it does like your REM sleep and your deep sleep. And I looked at I compared the two different data on the same night's sleep. It's probably within like 20%, nearly all of them.
Okay.
The one reason I like the Whoop more is like this one will generally, seems like it overestimates a bit. Like in bed for 8 hours, it'll like give you 8 hours.
Oh, okay.
Whereas like the Whoop tends to give me like 7 hours.
Yeah,
and it like breaks it up a bit more light. So I think that one looks a little bit better. The respiration rate seems like almost exactly the same as what you get on the Whoop. And pretty much then the only other good stuff that I didn't realize it had was it means I don't have to take my phone because it can do like whatever, like your music and shit like that connects to your headphones.
Oh, so exactly like the Apple Watch. It's connecting to AirPods?
Yeah, connects to your headphones. Yeah, so it does all that type of stuff as well. So I guess the only thing that's really changed my mind on it is that I think that if you're into running and you're into fitness in any sort of way, like, probably is worth having something like this. Even just being able to, like, sync up your heart rate and shit with how your fitness was and the data it gives you. Because you can look at it like, oh, like, you know, I did this and then my heart rate was, like, average higher. Which when I have the Whoop and it's like my run is on a different platform, it's like hard to see them together.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you see like your Whoop score, you're like, oh, okay, cool. Like that was my run, my heart rate was like this, but it hasn't got like your run data.
Yeah.
Exactly in it. So having just those things together has made it better. But
so that last watch you had didn't have any of this stuff?
Not really. It had like run data, but it said it didn't do your heart rate and shit like that.
Yeah.
Okay. It didn't take all your metrics. It takes all your metrics.
Must have been pretty old, right? How long you had that thing for?
Probably like 6 years old?
Oh, yeah.
7 years old?
Way outdated.
Things just improve.
In the tech world, super outdated.
Things just improve really quickly. So, it does pretty much everything the Whoop does. I don't think it does like the sleep and stuff like that as well. And it doesn't give you like all the community and shit.
Does it give you a recovery score?
Yeah, it gives you a recovery score every day.
And how close are they aligned with the Whoop?
Pretty similar.
Okay.
So far, they've actually been pretty similar. I don't know how long it needs to like get all its whatever together.
Yeah.
Like its metrics, but really similar. Like my resting heart rate will be identical every single day when I get it. So I think the accuracy of it is really high.
Yeah.
So man, it's pretty good. I think really it's one of the things. Like if you're into movement outdoors, it's good. If you're not, it's not really worth it.
So literally every single thing you mentioned there, every single thing. To like the accuracy and all that sort of stuff, you can obviously minus the recoveries and the sleep and stuff. You get actually sleep. I haven't checked it, but Apple Watch does all of that. Mm. Plus, you get more stuff outside of training. So obviously, the Apple Watch you can do text messages, do your WhatsApp, order Uber, that sort of stuff. You can pay for stuff.
Yeah, they put that stuff.
It's got payment now. Payment,
yeah, which is actually a fucking life changer.
Yeah, no, it's great. It has GPS on it as well, I think. I haven't used it yet, though. But, yeah, I would say that based off everything you said there, I would still go for an Apple Watch. Just because an Apple Watch, like, that is that you're wearing a fitness watch.
Yes.
Apple Watch, you can put a different band on it. You can take it out.
But it hasn't... does it have the resiliency to, like... You can swim and you can do whatever.
Yeah,
and
everything.
It's all good.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Everything. But it has a one-day battery life. That's probably the only downside. You have to charge it each day. But you charge your phone every day. So you just take your watch off and put it on every day. You take your watch off at night anyway, right? Oh, no, you're sleeping with it.
I sleep with it,
Oh, that's annoying.
Well, it does my alarm, which I like. Because it vibrate wake me up and everything in the morning.
Yeah, okay. Most people don't like to sleep with their watch on, though.
Mm.
So that's a bit annoying. But yeah, I wouldn't. Everything you told me then, like there's no way I'm taking off my Apple Watch, just swap it out for them. If you maybe there was like five or six things, I'm like, fuck.
I think, though, if you're very into your fitness, you want something more accurate for your fitness.
It's pretty accurate.
You reckon? Even if it's for like pace and shit as you're running.
Yeah, everything. Super accurate.
Does it do it off Wi-Fi or GPS?
It goes off 4G.
Oh, yeah. It goes off the internet. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty accurate, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess I never really go out of range.
So yeah.
Like fucking hiking.
Yeah. But anyway. So what do you give it out of 5 so far? How long have you had it for?
A week. Okay. A bit less. It's pretty good. I'd probably give it like a 4 out of 5 so far.
Okay, cool. Garmin, yeah, you heard that shit. Give us a sponsorship.
Mm.
Or give Raph a sponsorship. Apple, I'll take a sponsorship. All right, cool. So before we dive into listener questions, guys, Blue Box, we talked about them before. You have to protect your eyes from artificial light, especially at night. Like, I can't tell you how much of a difference it makes when I put my orange glasses on 3 or 4 hours before bed. They're stylish frames. Who cares if your roommates, who cares if your parents, who cares if your partner thinks you look stupid? What is stupid is waking up the next day with a shitty sleep and then forgetting stuff, having slow decisions, not being motivated to go to the gym because you're tired. That is what's silly. So make sure you get yourself a pair of blue light blocking glasses for the nighttime ones. And if you get anything else, so if you get the sleep mask, if you get maybe the daytime ones as well, if you get a total cart worth over $200, you actually get 25% off. So if you've been sitting on the fence with the Blue Box glasses, now is the time to convert. You won't get a deal this good ever again with them. We're only doing it through our podcast. So that code is MMP25, and that's going to get you 25% off when your cart is worth more than $200. So make sure you check it out. You can go to our link if you forget this, themindmuscleproject.com/blueblocks, BLUBLOX is where you can find that. All right, listener question number one.
First question, Hayden Alcorn. I've been a CrossFit coach for 4 years now and have done it full-time and now part-time alongside my full-time job. I'm guessing this is a full-time job outside of fitness.
So they went full-time coach, part-time, now part-time coach, full-time job.
I guess so, yeah. I guess okay. He means a non-fitness job. I like people yeah. just use the word job. Could be a fitness job. How or what can I do to be able to move to a full-time career in fitness?
Okay, so they were full-time fitness. Obviously, yeah. didn't pay well enough. Went part-time fitness, but full-time, make more money.
Yeah.
And now they want to go, okay, I want to get back to full-time fitness.
Yeah.
But I want to make more money than I did before.
Assuming. He doesn't yeah. exactly say that, but...
That's what it sounds like, right? To you? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and this is very common because he would have been a CrossFit coach, and you can't really be a full-time CrossFit coach at a normal CrossFit gym.
No way.
Because a regular... Cause obviously, much better ones out there, right? It's not like Invictus in America. They would have it fucking locked down.
Yeah, yeah.
But an average CrossFit gym, you really just get paid for the hours you coach. So, if you just add up all the classes on the whole schedule, A, that's like fucked up. You're coaching every single class on a schedule.
Yeah.
But B, even that is often not even a full-time salary.
Yeah.
So, it doesn't really work out, which is probably why this guy had to end up getting a job.
Yeah.
So, I understand where you're coming from.
The good a good rule I would use is, and I use this off Andy Frisella, and it's something I thought about for a while, and I agree with him on it, which is the 2% rule, which is like only really 2% of businesses are really going to succeed, like big, and succeed really well. And that's because he says 70%, they'll just never do it. Mm. They'll just like 70% of things will like have a small crack and it just won't work out, or they'll, you know, have a half-assed attempt and it'll be average. Like, for example, the 70% could be someone who's like, oh, I'll be a PT. They'll be a PT for 1 week, they quit. You know, it's like, oh, I'll be a PT. They do 2 posts on Instagram and then no one responds, so they just give up, right? So there's that. There's 70% gone already. Then you've got basically the next 20%, which have a good crack for maybe like a year, right? Maybe they open a gym, maybe they do an outdoor boot camp, maybe they become a PT, but they only really give it 12 months and then they give up. Things get a little bit hard. You know, maybe a family member dies, maybe a partner breaks up with them. Some event happens that derails them. You know, many of the dozens of things that you and I have gone through that makes them eventually just quit and give up, they're gone. What's left is then basically you have 10%. Of the businesses left in the fitness industry. In this case, we'll use gyms. 8% of those gyms have been around for a while, but within that 8% of those gyms, they're just in coast mode. So they've done relatively well. They've made a little bit of money. They support some people, but the people driving the ship, the leadership team, they're just in coasting mode. Like, they're just doing, you know, the normal thing. Things are going right. They're pretty happy with their life. But what that means is if they're not really pushing things forward and looking to grow, you coming in underneath them, and you working for the business, you're not really going to get any opportunities to grow. And so all that leaves basically is you got 2%, right? So say every 2 out of 100 gyms are like, they actually have a plan, they have a vision, they're motivated, they have the right leadership team, they actually have, you know, future careers that people can buy homes with, you know, like our coach always says, put braces on their kids, you know, support a family. And that's where you need to be a part of. So really, before you dive back into full time, you need to go find that 2%, right? You need to find that gym. If that's something you want to do full time, look, if you want to just be a coach for a bit and, you know, spend some time in the fitness industry, but then go back to finance after a few years or go back to law or whatever you want to do, you might, you know, that might be for you. You can find an 8% gym. But if you want it to be for life, you need to attach yourself to a real vision. You need to attach yourself to something that has a future, like long-term career for you. And I'd say that's in the 2% of gyms.
Yeah, and then I think the other side of that, so there's one side is like, hey, where are you going to go work? Obviously, you got to go work somewhere that has the capacity for this. But then B, I think you probably got to look yourself in the mirror and work out how you can become more valuable yourself.
Yeah.
Because right now, it sounds like, yeah, I can just coach CrossFit class. That's like reasonably valuable, but it's not that valuable. A lot of people can do that skill, even though it might be hard to hear that. If you can go back and work out how you can become far more valuable to potential employers in fitness, that's going to be good.
Yeah.
Right, so that might be learning how to do sales and fitness as well. Hey, I can like bring new clients in. I know how to like get them in on expensive programs. Awesome. You know, someone's going to pay way more for that than it's someone that can just coach. Maybe you go like do some programming courses. Hey, I know how to do long-term and short-term program design. Maybe you go really get into nutrition coaching, try some of that out. Hey, I can deliver nutrition coaching one-on-one and at scale as well. Just make yourself more valuable.
Yeah.
You can maybe do that while you've got a part-time job, while you've got a full-time job, but just... You know, how can you become a more valuable asset to the places you want to go to? And you've got more of those skills, much more of those places can give you a full-time job.
Yeah. And in the very short term, if you guys don't really know where to start with this and you are working in a CrossFit gym or you're working in another gym and you're like, well, I just don't really know where to start. I just don't really know how to make myself more valuable. I mean, the stuff that Raph said is really good, but I don't really think those opportunities are there, or I can't afford them, or whatever bullshit excuse you give yourself. The easiest things you can start doing is developing the small things that the owner will notice. So that would be showing up early, leaving late, paying attention to small details. In our one of our core values, one of our what we call superpowers, the first thing is owner's mind. It's right. Think, treat it as if you are the owner. The owners will notice that if it's a small gym. They'll go, wow, this guy's putting in extra effort. He's following up with clients. He's going the extra mile as if he owned the place. And then they're going to think, wow, I can give this person more responsibility. I can give them more opportunity because they're reliable. So that's the first thing. And you're doing it for yourself, right? You're doing it to develop more confidence, more competence within yourself, to be the person that says, okay, I take pride in what I do. I take care of the small details. I follow up. I do things better, because maybe it doesn't work out in this business, but developing those characters, character traits, those skills are useful in the next business. And the next person will come along and be like, wow, I don't know how you didn't succeed in that organization, because like, you're incredible. Like, I would love to, you know, give you some more responsibilities, some more leadership roles, or whatever it might be. You're worth more. And then the final thing I'd say is just ask, put your hand up and say, hey, how can I be more helpful? What is there? Is there something you're struggling with? Like, man, you know what? I just wish I could send more emails. Mm. Cool. I'll write an email campaign for you. You know, let's see how we go. Maybe it's terrible. Who cares? The fact that you helped out, you showed some initiative, some responsibility, is super useful. How many employees come up to us and try to offer, you know, when we first started, try to offer more than what we gave them? Very few. Mm. But the ones who did, they're very likely the ones who earned the most money, because they're willing to add more value. So if you don't know where to start, speak to the owner, speak to the manager, speak to the leadership team. Hey, how can I be more useful? What do you guys need support with? What do you need help with? Let me help out.
Okay, next question. Max_Allgood. How would you go about strength training, or training strength, he does say, for a sport, specifically AFL?
Man, I watched my first AFL game on the weekend.
People don't know that's Australian football. So yeah. Like Australian rules football. So it's like, how you describe it? Man, it's like a...
It's like a rugby ball.
Similar like a rugby ball, but I would say in terms of the demands of the sport, probably halfway between like rugby and soccer.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, because there's tackling, but there's also a lot of open field, a lot of open running.
Yeah, heaps of running.
Heaps of running.
So they cover a ridiculous amount of K's, more than soccer, I would say. Definitely.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest field in the world in any sport, the biggest pitch.
And then because they kick so far, right? Much further than soccer, you can be moving a lot in it. Yeah. Like I remember the fitness test at the Swan, one of them was 100 hundreds.
Yeah.
Under 13 seconds each one.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure how the K's compare. Maybe Connor can pull it up, the difference between AFL K's and soccer K's. But yeah, I'd say on average, the AFL K's probably seems a little like a bit lot. Different. Yeah. Well, the thing is...
I've never played it. This is...
Yeah.
Preface.
Well, I think the thing is as well, it's just like, because the ball is so different, there's just, naturally, there's always more running with AFL, because it's an unpredictable ball, how it like bounces and stuff, right? And versus how it, versus a soccer ball, it's like more predictable. So you can kind of just like stand on the spot and just, you know, be there's more anticipation, I guess. Okay, what is this? Rugby, 7 kilometers a game. Rugby league, 7.2. Football, soccer, 10 kilometers a game. AFL, 13 kilometers a game. There you go.
That's quite a lot.
That's a lot. Is there more? Oh, here we go. Cricket, 20 kilometers. Yeah, oh, yeah. That's out there for like all day. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
That's the only fitness test cricket comes on top.
Yeah. But yeah, you need a ridiculous level of fitness. But in terms of strength training, interesting, because we actually know some of the guys that play AFL. Matt DeBauer, who's been on the show. I mean, what they do and what they execute, what their coaches give them, I assume is going to be the best thing for their sport. They're at the professional level. And a lot of the stuff they do at this point is, you know, they obviously need tons of K's in their legs. So if you train too hard and too heavy through your legs, it's going to, you know, fuck up your sport. And that's the last thing you want to do is strength train for the sake of strength training, but ruin your sport. Strength training is there to enhance your sport. Okay, so best thing to do when you're doing this, Raph's got COVID. Best thing to do when you're... strength training is work on the areas where you're weak. So that might be your core, might be your lower back, might be your shoulders, man, it might be your glutes, it might be any of these things, but do it to the point where you don't take away from your sport. So if you notice, man, I think deadlifts are a really good movement for my sport, but you do heaps of deadlifts and then your running slows down, you're obviously not supporting your sport. So you need to balance that. Off-season versus in-season is very different as well. In-season training is going to look different off-season. Maybe in the off-season, you're like, man, I need to learn how to jump higher. I need to, you know, put on a bit more weight, then you can probably do some heavy strength training because you're probably not running as much. So it really depends on, time of the season and then what areas you're weak and developing those areas.
Yeah, you need to have totally different training in your off-season compared to your in-season. That's the trick with those sports. You try and be the gym guy all year round, it really messes you up.
Yeah.
Training look totally different. And then my experience with this is that if you are smaller and you need the muscle mass, the strength training and gaining muscle is like revolutionary, right? Totally changes your game. As soon as you have enough... it does nothing for you.
Yeah.
Right? So it's just like huge change. Like, yeah, you want to smash the bodybuilding training, smash the heavy lifting. As soon as you have enough muscle for your sport, that basically is then finished. Yeah. Over. Right? There's like no more benefit to it. So in that case, it's good. Obviously, single leg stuff and something like that can be often more beneficial than bilateral squats. And like, no one's going to give a fuck what your squat is, pretty much any of these sports.
They care how many goals you fucking kicked. Yeah.
No one cares, right? Yeah. So you just got to work out kind of, I think, what that level of strength and muscle mass is for you. Go for it. And then after that, it's like mostly just bulletproofing yourself from an injury perspective. You know, it's like I see it became very popular and it seems like they did some studies on it as well, which is good examples like the natural hamstring raise that is in the knees over toes program.
Yeah.
Like they reduce hamstring. They reduced hamstring, soft tissue hamstring pulls in athletes that could get to pretty much all natural version of that.
Yeah.
They did like a study on it. Because pretty much once you get the muscle mass you need, it's really just about how can I never have a soft tissue injury.
Yeah.
That's what the goal for most of these professional sports now is, no soft tissue injuries. So obviously you're going to have acute, like someone jumped on my shoulder. It is now sticking out of the like my skin.
Yeah.
But soft tissue injuries should not happen. So pull, groin, stuff like that. A big mistake I made, and I think heaps of athletes make now, is they get really tight in the hips. Man, if you're kicking and stuff like that, like you need super mobile hips, right? To do those kicks that they do. Like it's almost in the splits. Their foot is nearly in their face, you know, by the top. Most athletes are probably leaving something on the table there, particularly if you like play and then you go and sit down at work or study or whatever. So I'd be like crushing the mobility point of things. But yeah, just don't get too obsessed with your lifts.
Yeah. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's the goal there. Okay. Rachel Hale talked a bit about this, but she says, how is 75 hard going and how is it changing your approach to health and fitness?
Okay, we'll be quick on this one because we fucking go on about it all the time. But it hasn't really changed our approach to health and fitness. It's what it is. It's an internal change about what you believe you can get done in a day. So what you'll notice is it gets rid of procrastination because you just don't have the time to procrastinate on 75 hard. And then really, it just shows you your body doesn't really need a rest day. It just needs smart training in your program. You need a rest day because if you train 4 days a week, you probably make the most of those 4 days you train really hard. But if you're training 14 sessions a week, you just modulate the intensity accordingly and the frequency accordingly so that you can get by without needing a rest day.
Jack Stein asked, where do I find a cocaine bag for $300? That's a bargain post-COVID.
That's related to an Instagram post. If you didn't see that post, it was our all-time most popular post, but yeah, go speak to your local dealer.
Okay, last question. Unfortunately, your name has been screenshotted out of this. What's the best method to increase flexibility?
Okay. Broad question, but short answer to a broad question, which I guess we can elaborate on. Loaded stretching, so stretching with weight. So that might be like a Jefferson curl. If you don't know what that is, you can look it up. It might be like doing the pancake stretch with a barbell on your back. And it could be like loading up a little bit of weight and sitting in the bottom of the squat, right? Actually loading up stretches with weight.
Could even in some cases be like body weight in some, like using your body
weight.
Yeah, like
split positions and stuff. Yeah. Or hanging, that kind of stretches out the shoulders. So, yeah, loaded stretching, not just putting your shoulder against the wall and stretching out against the wall, like actually loading the position. That is going to increase the range of motion and it's going to have a permanent effect. And because flexibility is strength training. It's your ability to get into more extreme ranges of motion and control it, right? And that requires strength. And that is why you load these things up, because these increased ranges of motion, they require stability, they require strength, and so you have to load up stretches to get a permanent change. It's not going to be from, like, stretching to increase flexibility, it's going to work a little bit, but you'll just end up Gumby and weak. You want to stretch and increase flexibility and range of motion and be strong, and you do that by loading up stretches.
Yeah, and I would say it's probably even more important if you've, like, done strength training in the past, because it's just, like, more muscle mass and, like, more stiffness in around those hips. It often takes more to open them up.
Yeah.
You know, if you've like never strength training, you're really light, maybe you're like always a bit flexible, like, yeah, you can probably do it without loaded stretches, right? You just like work into it. But when your hips have like really been jammed up from years of abuse, you'll see how much more effective that weight is. I find for some people, like, you're so jammed up, it's like regular stretching is almost doing nothing. You're like barely getting the position.
Yeah.
You just sit there sweating and like nothing is happening.
Yeah. No, I agree. I don't really do any regular stretch anymore. Just to cool down and check out of the session. But other than that, I don't actually do it to increase range of motion. All right. Before we jump into the final review. That was the last question, right? Yeah. Before we jump to the final review. Guys, remember our programs are for phase two, right? So phase one of all the programs, Body, Strong, and Fitness, are an 8-week program. So the phase one is 8 weeks. Phase two is a 12-week program, which builds on different movements, different tempos, different exercises, whole different way of looking at the program. That's a 12-week phase. And that is now 30% off just for the month of April. So if you guys go to themymuscleproject.com/phase two, that's phase, so PHASE, and then the number 2, phase 2, you'll get 30% off any of the phase 2 programs. Okay, Raf, last chance to you. We had it for football. We probably reviewed it. They now have it for my favorite sport, basketball. And it is one of the best series I have seen in a long time coming out of these people. You know why I know it's so good? It's because Ev's actually watching it with me.
Oh, my God.
And she refuses to watch a football one. She'll break the TV over her knee if she has to watch one of the football ones again. So she's actually really enjoying it. I just think what's happened is they've just done so many seasons now that the filmmaking, the budget, and everything has just gotten so much better. You know, they've made like 4 or 5 seasons. They're probably like, all right, cool. When we do this, we get less views. When we do this, we get more views.
Oh, my God. 100% rating.
Dude, it is so good. Yeah, it is so good. It's just one of those things where, like, East LA, right, coming out of these, like, obviously really low-income, violent, kind of poverty-stricken areas that have... It just makes for characters with really amazing stories, you know? Like, some of these kids have faced more adversity in their whole life than people will in 80, 90 years of their life growing up in, you know, private school, eastern suburbs, Sydney, Australia. So, pretty incredible stories. And, yeah, it's just... It's interesting because you watch it and you see so much of yourself in, or at least I do, in these kids when they're playing basketball and they're really being pushed to the limits of themselves. And interesting how they like push back or give up or give in or push themselves more. And it's a great show. Not at the end yet, so I can't speak to whether they win the state title or not.
Is it all fictional or do they base it on a certain team or anything like that?
All fictional.
Yeah.
No, it's documentary.
I thought it was a fictional.
No, this whole
show.
Last Chance U is a documentary. All the seasons are documentaries.
Wow, all this time I thought it was like kind of based on a sports team, but they like recreated everything.
No, dude, it's all real.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's real.
Like Hoop Dreams.
Everything. I don't know what that is, but yeah, it's documentary. Yeah, it's real schools, real people, nothing made up. Yeah.
So was it like a recent season?
Yeah, it would have been like, the coronavirus hasn't hit, they haven't talked anything about it. So it would have been probably 2019, they probably filmed it. Yeah. So, it's the East LA. So, Last Chance U is a series based off community colleges. So, I don't know the college system that well, but basically, it's like kids that have fallen out of D1 and D2 schools going to a community college, or people that can only get into a community college. And they're like the sport teams, but they're like all these elite athletes because they've fallen out of, like, they're like Division 1 level, but maybe their grades weren't good enough or they ended up in a gang, they went to jail. Like, they have all these different reasons why they're not at the D1 schools, but they're like D1 level players, some of them. So, they're playing like really high-level basketball.
So, it's college-age kids. So, like 18, 19, 20.
Yeah. And they're trying to get back to the D1 schools. So, like in the shitty community college, there's no funding, there's no money. There's just like a coach that really wants them to succeed. A great program for these like kids that can't afford anything. And they're like hoping that the scouts like pick them up at the end. That's like the whole purpose of the show. So, they're like... There's one thing that's like, yes, we want to win a state title, but... The other side of the story is like, hey, I want a better life for you. Like, I don't want you stuck at this shit community college. I want you in a D1 school. I want you to have something better for your life. Better education, better degrees, all this sort of stuff. So, it's like, hey, you're not just doing this for the state title. You're actually doing this to get into a D1 scholarship as well. So, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. Anyway, so I'm really enjoying it. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5.
There's no other ways to get out. Do they not encourage them to like get out not through sport? Is it always just like, hey, like sport is the only way out for you?
No, it can be, but in the context of these guys, they only want to be athletes.
Right.
So it's only through sport. But yeah, you could find another story in the community college.
No, I'm just curious in how they approach it. Like so that everyone is like, no, I've got to get picked up.
Yeah.
By a school.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what that's what they want. Mm. That's what they just want to play. They don't see themselves sitting at a desk like, I don't know, doing sales or something, right? I mean, they might with a degree later, but they want to make basketball work for them. Yeah. That's the whole point.
Yeah, sick.
Yeah, you should watch it. All right, that's it. You haven't watched it, so you need to go watch it. Guys, thanks so much for tuning in to this episode this week. Remember, you can get those programs again, and get any program, themymuscleproject.com/programs. It's always there. We've got a new website as well. Connor made a beautiful website, so have a look, check it out. And then, if you think this is worthwhile reviewing or sending to a friend, that's all we ask, guys. Pass it on to one person or leave us a 5-star review. We always appreciate those things. Thanks very much, team. We'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com. /theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.